This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 202 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. In our part of the world, it is hotter than a smoldering cock. I hope the weather near you is more comfortable. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Wayne is quite correct. It has been hot.
Oh, sticky.
Yeah, Australia, I believe, was the hottest January on record ever in Australia. And we kind of avoided it till February. Apparently now it's all caught up with us.
Oh, man, it's just killing.
It's been unpleasant on this side of the country. Welcome to the podcast, which is all about the weather. It's where we count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today, we are commencing our coverage of the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
2019 Oscars are a couple of weeks away, and we are going to take a swing at the number 1 to 10, 10 to 1, best Academy Award winning performances by a lead actor or actress.
Yeah.
In the last 90 years, because this is the 91st Oscars that are about to happen.
There have been many.
Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun to celebrate some great performances. Probably a pretty quick countdown, so we've decided to also give you our Oscar predictions.
Yeah.
Who's going to win? Something we do every year on the show. In the main categories that Wayne and I pay attention to, and I think I won the first couple of years. Last year was basically a draw.
Yeah, because, you know...
Last year, we all just went straight down the line, and we were right in every single one, I think.
That's because we actually... I did research for a change instead of just saying shit. So
did you do research for this one?
No.
Excellent.
This year, you're definitely going to win, because I'm like, I think this. Why? Because I'm an idiot. All
right? Well, we do it by head and heart, so...
The head is also often wrong, so there you are.
So there's that. And we're also going to have a little bit of a return from Seagal Watch. So Seagal is in the country. He's doing his thing at the moment.
Oh, he's here, isn't he?
And he is, what's the word, surprising slash putting people off left, right, and center.
Is he really? We'll hear
about that. But before we get there, then, let's have the results of last week. The Master Debaters, Toffer and Sean, came on the show, and we counted down our top 10 movie prequel ideas.
Yeah.
Now, the results are in just a moment. But first, I wanted to shout out Chef Ben Randall from the In the Weeds podcast.
Okay.
He sent a pretty lengthy email with his three prequel ideas. They're all excellent, but I want to cherry pick the one to read to the audience. This is a sequel slash prequel, so bear with me. This is the last Terminator movie I ever want to see. John Connor has determined that the machines are primarily using solar power to run their technology, so he authorizes a nuclear attack on an uninhabited volcanic island in the Pacific, setting off a chain reaction volcanic eruption, darkening the skies with smoke and shit. This turns out to be a terrible fucking idea when the machines turn to the only other easily available source of power they can find, the metabolic and heat energy generated by the human body. The machines start grabbing people and putting them into energy farms. The people in the farms are dying and the machines don't know why, so they ask Connor for a truce. During the truce, they sit down and invent the Matrix.
Oh, shit.
Connor says it's the only way to save the human race because his dumbass just killed agriculture forever. Terminator, Scorched Skies.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That's huge.
That's not a bad idea.
Which of these
at all.
Two studios and how do we get them together?
Yeah, copyright for Chef Ben Randall. There we go.
Nice one,
go
Ben.
Go talk to him if you want to make that particular film. Thank
not
you for
bad,
that.
Not bad, mate. Not bad.
The result then. Now, Toffer did go online suggesting, or on air last time suggesting, if they got within 20, he'd be happy. Well, you can be happy, Toffer.
Yeah.
Because after a very close beginning race where at one stage it was only 4 or 5 votes different,
bloody hell.
We end up triumphing 34-17.
Okay, it was close though.
I'm pretty sure Toffer shot himself in the foot when he doubled down on hating Jaws.
Toffer is a man who does that every episode. I feel your pain.
Thank you, gentlemen. Go if you haven't already, do check out the Master Debaters. We're going to be on their show sometime very soon. We recorded that after we recorded their ep, and they were on our ep, I should say. And that was a lot of fun as well. Mm. It does feature me singing very badly and Wayne singing very well.
You know what? I really want to hear that.
Bit scary. Could be a bit scary.
You know, folks, if you have one of those Android devices, then you really should consider downloading the Podcast Republic app.
That's right. This week's plug. Thank you, Wayne.
There you go. Yeah, it's a real good-ass app, and you can listen to us on it, as well as every other podcast you want chill with.
Yeah, it has all the features that you need, so why wouldn't you check it out? The Podcast Republic app.
Give it a go.
Let's get straight into it then, with a bit of a listener fave, shall we say, when we talk a lot about Steven Seagal.
Seagal Watch.
Steven Seagal, as I said, in the country. And it's reportedly was set up here for and promoted by the same guy who organized Charlie Sheen and Arnold Schwarzenegger to do these.
Right?
Now, the tickets, we looked at this, right?
Yes, we did.
With a lot of people pushing for you to go to this.
Yeah, go there and challenge him and shit.
Yeah, and challenge him and see if he'd fight and whatever else. The tickets range from $69 to $999.
Keeping it just under the K for Steve.
Jeez, quite a bargain to hear an adult man in an acre-sized kimono mumble about on deadly ground, says uprocks.com, which is where all this information is coming from. So did you know he published a book?
No, but it doesn't surprise me one
the
bit.
The Way of the Shadow Wolves, : The Deep State and the Hijacking of America.
What kind of... really? That's what he wrote? You know, that's the thing. Whenever there's a huge social issue, the world cries out, yep. What does Steven Seagal think? To hell with the pundits.
Wow. Yeah, anyway, so I thought that was pretty much funny enough. So, of course, Steven Seagal's handler, when he did a bit of the press junket, he went around to Triple M and these kind of places, and no one was allowed to ask questions about the history of sexual abuse allegations and that's all the rest of assault allegations. Yeah, okay. Of course. But in another interview with Australia's Daily Telegraph, Seagal apparently brought in a Russian woman whose mm-hmm. job it was to scratch his back where his fat ass could not reach.
Really? Does she have to use her hands? I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, so she appeared to be a masseuse and...
He's got an ass scratcher.
And there was a smell of deep heat, as if his shoulder was a troubled area, if you ask me, says the interviewer there.
No shit, he's probably whole now?
Yeah, Jonathan Moran was the one who did that interview.
Oh, wow, that's just nasty.
That's just incredible. And there were some other bizarre things where, you know, bodyguards had to come in with weapons and shit like this.
What?
And yeah.
In Australia?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So Steven Seagal, there he is, making friends all over the world.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Anything else you want to say to Steven at this point?
Well, now that I know he's got bodyguards and a back-scratching Russian woman on staff, I'm having second thoughts about challenging him. He'll send his people in.
Is it the back-scratching Russian woman that worries you the most?
Yeah, but in an exciting way.
And on that note, let's close it off with the usual.
Nice.
Our 2019 Oscar prediction. Some people think the whole Oscars thing is a sham and it's all bought for, and they point to things like, you know, Shakespeare in Love beating Saving Private Ryan 20 years ago.
Well, we all know about that. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein.
But other people are right on into it, and you can bet on this, all this kind of stuff. So here is our take on six major categories which we will run through, including screenplay, cinematography, director, the actors, and best picture. Maybe that's seven. Yeah, seven. Seven categories.
Seven pictures. Categories.
All right, so... Wayne, we deal with this as head and heart. Head is the one which we are going on record for. Heart is the one that we want to win.
Exactly.
All right. Lead us away then with your best adapted screenplay, head and heart picks.
Okay. The nominees are The Ballad of Buster Scruggs by Joel and Ethan Coen, Black Klansman by Spike Lee, Can You Ever Forgive Me by some other people.
Yeah, just say the name of the film.
Yeah, okay. If Beale Street Could Talk and A Star is Born.
All right. What's your pick then?
My head tells me that... Geez, I don't fucking
listen
know.
Listen to the confidence.
I just don't know. I think if they're going to give anything to a Netflix show, it's this
Thrill
one.
Me.
Okay. It's this one. So I'm going to say The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. That's your head one. Yes. What's your heart?
My heart tells me A Star is Born.
Okay. That's also why I went with heart. I want Star is Born to win.
Oh, well.
My head is saying that this is where Spike Lee is going to pick up something.
Yeah, I had another way with that, but okay, absolutely.
So I think this is where the best adapted screenplay will come. Best original screenplay?
Best original screenplay. The nominees are The Favourite, First Reformed, Green Book, Roma, and Vice.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'll go first this time. My head pick is The Favourite. Might take this one out. I haven't seen this one either. Green Book is my sort of heart pick, because I have to say, look at this list of films and none of them. Like, there's no way Roma wins Best Original Screenplay.
Have you seen Roma?
Yes.
Holy shit! I don't mind telling you that I turned that bitch off two-thirds in. I was just too bored.
You missed the best parts in the last... There's two scenes which are great.
Really? Well, at the stage where the dude was doing martial arts with stick fighting and his cock out...
Yes.
I was like, oh shit! And then I couldn't stop looking at his dick because it was flopping around as he was moving.
Sure, that's why.
No, it was. I was like, oh my God. It was sort of a problem. It's like, Jesus. And plus, up to there, it's so boring.
Yeah, it's very long.
It's so long. Anyway, so fuck that movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, in my head, Green Book gets the official.
That's not a bad pick at all. Yeah. Could well take it out.
And I think I want Vice to win.
Mm.
Not that I'm saying it's a perfect screenplay, but I was the most engaged in that movie.
Fair enough. All right. Well, best cinematography then. This one is an absolute home run, I reckon. What are the nominees?
Best cinematography nominees are Cold War, The Favourite, Never Look Away, Roma, and A Star is Born.
What's your pick?
Fuck, I've only seen two of these. So, you know what? The cinematography in Roma is boring as hell, but I bet that's what they go for. I reckon they'll go for Roma.
Boring as hell, you say?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. That film is stunning.
Is that what everyone's saying?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Really?
And I want it to win. There's no, like, that black and white cinematography, the slow, sideways dollies.
Hang on.
The spinning camera.
Given that Alfonso Cuarón,
mm-hmm.
the gravity guy,
mm-hmm.
this is pretty Bush League for him, in my opinion. You think? No, really?
Yeah.
It's lingering shots.
I'm pretty sure anyone who actually has operated a camera in the history of their life is now really upset with you.
I'm sorry, camera people. Maybe I should have watched the whole thing. Okay.
All right. So what is that your head pick as well?
That's that's my head pick is A Star Is Born.
Okay. What's your heart pick?
Sorry. The head pick is Roma.
Yeah. Okay.
The heart pick is Star Is Born.
So we're tied there. Yeah. Although I went hard as well. I think. Yep. Yeah, bam.
Really?
All right. Best director then.
Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Pawel Palahniuk from Cold War.
Yep.
Yorgos Lanthimos from The Favourite, Alfonso Cuarón, Roma, and Adam McKay, Vice. My head is also freaking Alfonso Cuarón for Roma.
Yep, definitely, I'm right there with you. So we're tied on those two.
And I would love to pick Spike Lee.
Yeah, that's me too. We're exactly the same in that
category.
No,
I don't.
Oh.
Because Spike Lee's shit.
Spike right? Lee, you don't want to, I would love
Black
Spike
Klansman was a great...
I'd love to see Spike Lee win a Best Director award,
man,
for his body of work.
If he had an ounce of subtlety in his body, sure. But this movie, at the end, it's just a fucking boom, American flag, and it's upside down. You know, and it's just...
All of your arguments
are
like,
no, no, no,
asshole,
he has
man.
No subtlety, okay? He just puts the thing out there and goes, look, we're gonna read this thing. That's shit. All right, that's what ruined it. So no, my actual heart is fucking Adam McKay, Vice.
What? No.
No, no, no.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't like fucking Spike Lee's stupid shit.
Wow, you... If we had any listeners, they've just all turned off in droves. We should have done this after the countdown. Holy shit. All right. Well, speaking of the countdown today, then, best actress.
The nominees are, Yalitza Aparicio from Roma. Glenn Close, The Wife, Olivia Colman, The Favourite, Lady Gaga, A Star Is Born, Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me?
All right. I'll go first this time.
Good.
My head pick is Glenn Close. She won...
Yeah.
The Golden Globe, and they're going to award body of work she's never won.
I actually put Glenn Close in as well for that exact reason, because
yep.
she hasn't won before. My heart is that this is a problem. The girl was quite good in Roma.
Oh, wow. Okay, my heart was Lady Gaga, because if Cher has a fucking Academy Award, why can't Gaga?
Because Gaga wasn't that good in this.
Well, I'm just saying.
All right.
Are you trying to tell me Cher was that great in Moonstruck?
Yeah, you're right. But then again, Marissa Tomei. You're right. This thing is rigged. Who knows?
Best actor then. Second last actor. Category.
Nominees are Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen for Green Book.
Go on then, Wayne.
I believe Bradley Cooper gets this award.
That's my heart pick.
That's my head
There's
pick.
There's no chance he wins. I'm sorry.
Well, it's also my heart pick.
Okay. I could. I'm torn 50-50 here. It's either Rami Malek or Christian Bale, but I have to pick one, so I'm going to go with Malek.
Malek, you're right. You're probably right.
But look, if Bale wins, I will not be surprised. In fact, in other betting pools, I'll go the other way and I'll bet Bale. Because
he's so amazingly good in this.
I haven't seen Vice. I haven't seen a lot of these films, I have to say. Last year, I feel like I saw almost all of them, but
the fact that you were fooled by the trailer.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Means like, who's that guy? Holy shit, it's him.
And Bale, has he won an Academy Award?
I don't think he has. No.
It could be him.
To pick my, I'd like to
but I think the only thing that Bohemian Rhapsody has a chance of winning is actor, and that's it. And they'll give it something, and this would be the thing that it would give, because it's got nothing to do with singer and the whole backlash against him. That's right. The rationale there. And finally, Best Picture.
Best Picture nominees: Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice.
All right. Well, I will lead away here. My head pick is Roma.
Really?
I warned about this because it's the Netflix thing, and also it's nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. So, I don't know. Can they give Best Foreign Language and Best Picture?
Yes. This is the thing, right? I think that it'll win Best Foreign Thingy.
Yeah.
But I think they're not given yet Best Picture to a Netflix movie.
Yeah, you might very well be right.
I don't believe they're doing that.
But every one of these films has a massive knock against it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So, this is the most wide open one ever.
Well, I think Black Klansman will be picked.
Okay. That's not a bad pick at all.
Because politically... You know, Oscars so not so white this year. #.
Okay.
Right? And then I want A Star Is Born to win.
Yeah, I want Black Panther to win. Man, how great would it be if an MCU film won?
That was my runner-up, but the only reason it's not on here is because Black Panther, it's like, well, if a comic...
It can't win. I want it to win. No, it won't.
I want it to, but I think if a comic book movie should have won, it should have been The Dark Knight.
Yeah, well, look, The Dark Knight broke new ground, and that's allowed Black Panther. And that political vote you just talked about could also give Black Panther some votes. And that's all preferential ordering.
It's a really good point.
1 through 9. So,
no one's
voting Black Panther 1, but it might get a lot of 3 and 4 votes, so who knows?
Agreed, if only there was a runner-up category.
Mm. All right, well, that's it. That's our Oscar predictions.
I'm sure we got that all wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure we... I am not confident this year. Last couple of years, I've been pretty confident going in. Won every Oscars betting pool I was in, but this year, no chance, I don't reckon. It's so wide open. All right, that's our picks for this year's Oscars. We'll find out in a couple of weeks who was right, who was wrong, and the stakes. One film, feature review, pick for the year.
Oh, sure.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, that's the stakes.
Oh, man, you're going to win again and make me
do a damn. We've got enough
movie.
Different this time. We should actually have a result. Yes, I will make you do a damn
horror movie. I'm going to go see some shitty horror movie. Fuck. All right.
That's correct. I can't even hit what no because it's 100% right.
Oh, you're an asshole. All right,
the other side is music cue then. Let's get into it proper. The countdown of the best Academy Award winning performances. Academy Awards does pretty well for itself. This week we are celebrating the best performances that the Academy has recognized in the last 90 years, either actor or actress.
For leading roles.
Leading roles only. So not supporting. We've left that one alone. That might be a future year's countdown, but we stuck to the leading categories only.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted it to cover both women and men, and that's the parameters. Pretty straightforward, really.
Sure.
Here's my caveat. I have given lots of performances to films I don't like.
So, yeah, that's fine, because it's supposed to be performance.
Yeah. So they're films which I didn't like overall, mm-hmm. but which what carried it, or at least gave me enough of a chubby to give it a vote here, was the actual performance within it.
I think I went somewhat that way, but also more like if the movie I liked, it certainly helps because it helps me like the character. So I think that had a factor for me.
Yeah. So this one would probably be a very subjective list. It might even be hard to... I guess it's still worth doing a vote on, but...
Yeah.
All right. So... We'll in effect, then, Wayne, why don't you lead us away? What the hell?
Okay.
With your number 10 best performance.
Number 10 best performance. This is an odd one to start off with, and it's definitely a nostalgic one. It is Yul Brynner in The King and I.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you about this, okay? I used to watch The King and I with my grandmother when I was a child.
There you go.
For anyone who's too young to remember this film, all of you, it's about the King of Siam in the 1860s, where he hires a white woman to come to his palace in Bangkok and tutor his children. He's got hundreds of children.
Sorry, hired a white woman to come to his palace in Bangkok.
Oh, good one. I don't think he even needs to hire anyone for that. This is Deborah Kerr,
yeah.
And I particularly
enjoy...
Is she
in An Affair to Remember?
I honestly don't know, but it feels like she is. Yeah. Someone can correct us on that.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed a scene where she's teaching him to dance. It's really kind of cool in the way he is and stuff. My supportive grandmother, who had the good sense to know that I would one day be bald, told me that Yul Brynner is a handsome man and that one day I would look like him.
So unlike your mother,
unlike my mother,
who says you don't look like James Bond.
Yes, it skips a generation. So insofar as we'd both be bald, I guess. So I had an ex-girlfriend once tell me that Yul Brynner was sexy as hell. And I said, wow, do I look like him? And she's like, no. So,
What year was this?
I think it was 1957.
Oh, same year, I'm fair to remember, and it was Deborah Kerr. So there we
go. Oh, look at that. Wow.
Okay, I can see that one. That's an interesting pick. Obviously, not on my list, never even factored in. And that's maybe the oldest pick you have ever made.
Absolutely. And you know what? I didn't even know it won an Academy Award. I just remember that movie really well. Yeah. I guess
my guess. Yeah, well, one of the oldest picks ever.
There you are. So,
all right, nicely done. My number 10 is also, my number 10 is a much more contemporary film. It's from 1991.
Mm-hmm.
It is Jodie Foster as FBI agent Clarice Starling in The Silence of the Lambs.
Did she get an Academy? Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. She did.
That took the big five out. It took the script. It took director, best picture, and the two leads. So, I mean, this film arguably opened up the whole female agent thing. So
I would agree.
Without this film, I don't know if we have the X-Files in the
I
way
don't think so.
That it worked. Not that that's the reason to celebrate it. Her performance is stunning in it. Jodie Foster, at that point, was killing everything in her career. I think she also won for The Accused, which I don't know if I've ever seen that movie.
I have seen that movie, and it's actually kind of a hard watch.
Yeah, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So this is... She's such a vulnerable character, but also at the same time, steely resolve and very intelligent and just a wonderful character, very well brought to life.
I remember being, as a child, or whoever, how old I was when I saw this, kind of impressed and intrigued at her drawl, her southern drawl.
Mm.
I just thought it was cool that this, you know, you never hear that accent usually, like for this, at least at the time. So she was cool in this. Yeah, definitely. And that whole night vision scene.
This is Starling.
Starling, yeah. So yeah, cool, not bad.
Thank you.
Right, my number nine is a movie that I adore. And the performance is by Dustin Hoffman, who won Best Actor for Rain Man. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so it's probably old hat now, but back when the movie dropped, okay, the whole Dustin Hoffman playing an autistic character thing was revolutionary and groundbreaking.
Yeah, first.
And I certainly had no idea about it as a young fellow myself. And of course, I love me some Tea to the Sea. So Tom Cruise, right? What up?
Sure.
So part of this is me liking the film, but I remember Dustin Hoffman's walk. He would walk with his head cocked and looking down, using this vacant space look in his eyes. And I didn't know anything about autism back then, so I didn't...
Of course.
As far as I knew, that's
1988.
Exactly, right? So I was ready to believe, perhaps foolishly, that that's what it looks like. You look at it now, it actually seems a little overplayed.
Yeah.
But back then, it convinced me that every autistic person had some kind of superpower where they could count toothpicks on the floor, because I'm an idiot, Paul. I'm an idiot.
You were 13 or 14.
Yes, an idiotic 13-year-old. But, you know, even so, this is a powerful performance. And
agreed.
The whole thing where, you know, he's at the end, he's like, I want to keep Charlie. He wants to go back to his brother, but he can't. That kind of wrecked me a bit. Hmm. So, yeah.
Okay.
Big fan of this.
I can say that. I've got one on my list coming up, which is also a first for Hollywood. And I think this was the first time in a mainstream release that they did have a major character with autism. So.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Yeah. Hmm. Barry Levinson, man.
All right. My number nine is almost the oldest film on my list, and it's celebrating a fine actor who, through generations, has lived on, and you might have him in a different role,
yeah,
because he's won more than once, and I'm talking about Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest I only saw a very, very, very long time ago, so I can barely remember it, but I know this is celebrated for him, right?
1975, and again, a film about... As the Academy likes to award sort of a different type of person. Now, this one, he's faking, so to speak, mental health issues so he can get into a psychiatric hospital and serve out cushy time for a statutory rape of a 15-year-old.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
I've forgotten.
Like, he's had sex with an underage girl and
wow,
is guilty for it.
And
yeah. So, he gets in there and he is an outspoken free spirit, and he recognizes very fast that they're all oppressed under this Nurse Ratched, I think her name is. And so he starts to help them come out of the shell, is exactly what the tonic that they need. And she doesn't like that shit. And so it becomes a bit of a battle of wills between them. And yeah, it ends the way it ends. I won't spoil it, even though it's 44 years old.
So the kind of the protagonist is this child rapist. Or is it not played like that?
Well, I think it's more like, I don't believe he went out and he didn't know from memory.
Oh, it was a...
Statutory rape.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Well, look, that's obvious. I can't say anything about this, but
he thought she was above age and wasn't, and was found guilty correctly of that particular crime. And so feigns mental health issues because he thinks it'll be cushy in this.
It's not better, but that's better. Jeremy is actually not a vindictive rapist. It was this guy.
No. That would be much harder.
You can't do it. So...
Anyway, right. So he does a great job in that film and is celebrated across the... And she won, I think, Best Female Performance that year as well.
Oh, okay. Mm. That's a sweep too. The year we
won. At least it's supporting, maybe, because if Jack won Best Actor. Yeah.
Very nice. All right. My number eight is... Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, I knew this would be on this.
Of course
it's my honorable mention.
Right? Because this is... Now, when I saw Wall Street as a youngster, I remember not understanding any of it. I didn't know what the fuck stocks were. I didn't know any of that shit. I didn't know what insider trading was. Having watched it successively over the years, I adored it. And I do adore it now. I did not adore the sequel. But...
what's it called?
It's called Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
That's it, okay.
Or the critics called it Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, but you will. Yeah. So that aside, though, this character itself is essentially was actually rumored to be based loosely on several actual financiers, including Oliver Stone's own dad. And,
oh, right. I didn't know that part.
He's a corporate raider, Asher Edelman, and another guy called Milken, who was the junk bond king of the 1980s. But this movie itself, given that it came out kind of like in the 80s, all right?
88?
87, yeah. 87,
sorry, close.
Yeah. I don't know. The movie itself isn't satirizing its own thing. It's actually trying to tell a story. But now it's a satire when you look at these 80s Coke King dudes or whatever, right? But
Michael Douglas's performance was just, I thought it was groundbreaking because he was the first character I saw saying shit like greed is good and spitting it out in front of all these people and saying this is crap, and he had that hair. I don't know. I adored that whole thing. I think that's why I like Suits. I think Gordon Gekko is why I like Suits. There you go.
He's iconic from that particular
age. He'll always be.
Age?
Yes.
And for a long time there, that yuppie culture was celebrated, was like, yeah, until then.
Dude.
Basically, arguably almost all the way to the global financial crisis.
It's maybe why American Psycho was written, in my opinion. So, you know, that was, this is where it started. So
And he personified it perfectly. Hmm. So, and no one's ever going to accuse Michael Douglas of not being slickly charming / sleazy.
Totally. I think he's still getting away with shit now, to be honest with you. You know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I'm not saying he's playing that character, but no, I like the guy. He's got a level of charm that I can respond to or something. Yeah, so he's the shit. Big fan of that performance.
Yep, knew that one was coming with this. I didn't know how high, so nice. Yeah. I mentioned before with your number 9, yes, that Hollywood doing the whole first mainstream sort of depiction of something.
Yes.
My number 8 has a similar theme / approach, and that is Philadelphia.
Ah.
From 1993, with of course Tom Hanks nominated for his role as a gay man who has contracted HIV and is trying to keep it all hidden away because he knows he'll lose his job as a lawyer.
Yep.
Or suspects he'll lose his job as a lawyer, and that's indeed what happens. He gets dismissed unfairly, and then the homophobic Denzel Washington character takes his case on, and whilst Tom Hanks is dying, helps him reach the point of surviving.
You know what was cool about this movie?
Sorry, surviving. Of winning.
Yeah,
He doesn't survive anything. Yeah.
I was just wondering about that. Spoilers. What do you mean? Yeah. No, that was cool. Like, because the Denzel Washington homophobic character that you say, right? For the time.
Standard.
All right? Because he's all like, I got no problem with gay people necessarily. And he's like that, right? But then some dude tries to hit on him in the bar or whatever. And he's like, you little... that sort of shit.
So, but also the point of the fear-mongering around HIV and AIDS. And even though a doctor stands up in court and / on screen and says, you can't pass HIV
by just being
by touch or whatever. Yeah, there has to be a swapping of bodily fluids.
Yes, you have to inject it into
So, and yet they still fire his ass. So I think it's a very powerful film, very, very powerful, very emotional, even as a young man watching that one, as you say, not as open-minded and understanding and tolerant of the world as we are now.
Totally. So. And you know, if just for fun, there's a Today Show, the American Today Show in the 1980s talking about AIDS. This is how little they knew about it, right? And they were just saying stuff like, apparently if someone's in the same room as you, you can get it. I was like, oh my God. It was just nuts at the time. So, yeah, there you are. Okay, well, my number 7 is Emma Stone in La La Land. Now, okay. Paul hates this movie.
I don't hate the movie. I liked it more than I thought I would.
There was this one scene that I think everyone knows where Emma is meant to do. She's actually on camera. And she's doing a performance and she's changing it up and going, you know.
The audition scene?
Yeah, the audition scene. That is, I can only imagine how hard that is to do. Like that, how many times that scene.
It's a pretty cool shot too, where it's that one shot which swoops around her, slowly dollies around her, comes back to the perspective. And she gets more and more into, the lights go down around her.
That's why it became cool, because I was with her the entire time. Mm. But also, I mean, look, you can say this about Rygos too, but those performances, the dancing and the singing numbers, that shit would have taken forever because it was just one shot the whole time. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I loved La La Land, and I loved the end too. I mean, the end just killed me. The ending killed me. So you know, this is a good answer.
Yeah, I'm not surprised on your list. That's not one I can get behind.
Oh no, I didn't think it'd be anywhere near your son.
But my number 7 is also from a film I don't like. I actively close to despise this film, but the exception to it. In fact, both my 7 and 6 fall into this category. The exception to what makes it. I'm amazed I can pick out this amongst what I consider to be really heavy-handed dross, and that is from 2010, Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan. It's Natalie Portman as the Swan Queen or whatever the hell she plays.
This is a good pick.
So that unraveling, that mental unraveling of her, and if it wasn't so much like fucking work, this movie would probably be a lot better for me.
Yes, I thought you might have an issue with this.
Yeah, but her performance is fantastic. The showing, first of all, how she can get to this perfectionistic sort of stance, and then how it effectively destroys her mind, and she unravels to a psychotic state where she sees herself killing people and it doesn't happen, and but stabs herself, and it's extremely full on, and
it's harsh as
she never wavers. Like any question you had about Natalie Portman's acting prowess after the Star Wars prequels, this film answered, and rightly so, she won the Academy Award.
Absolutely. You know, her career was over. She said she couldn't book a gig after Star Wars. And someone put it in a movie, and I can't remember what it was, because it was a friend of someone's.
Right.
And then she became and went
became and then did eventually
this.
Came
so
and did
good
this.
For her. Mm. I got a question about the movie. She didn't actually turn into a fucking swan, did she?
No.
So the idea is when she sees shit coming out of her arms and whatever and that, that's all in her head.
Yeah, same way as when she stabs Mila Kunis's character to death. And then 5 minutes later, Mila Kunis's character says, "Hi, well done, you did really great."
Bloody Darren Aronofsky. Yeah. He's fucking, look at this shit now. Fucking, I don't know. Look, I understand.
My feelings about Aronofsky as a filmmaker are well documented.
Yes, that's true. I'll be honest with you. I didn't hate this movie. I was sitting
there going, no, it's fine. Most people like it.
In the mood for it or something.
Most people like it.
There you are. Okay. My number six is Reese Witherspoon in Walk the Line.
Oh, I've never seen this movie.
Oh, God, you should. This is, first of all, everyone, I don't have a thing for Reese Witherspoon. Many men do. Chief among them, Christian, one of our friends and previous co-host. She's nice and all, but a lot of, you know, he finds, I'm not really on that jam. Okay. However, this movie here, she's doing this, first of all, she's singing. Very impressive. So did River Phoenix.
Not River. What's his name? Joaquin.
Joaquin, yes, okay.
Joaquin Phoenix, yeah.
But her, I can't remember the name of her character in there, but her interaction with him and them falling in love on stage, I liked her more than I liked him.
Very similar to A Star Is Born, copied it a little bit. A little bit.
It is, but there was none of this tragic shit. They actually got married. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but I mean, like that scene where they're singing together, Shallow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that was a bit of inspired by?
Actually, now that you mention it, yes. I mean, that one was... Yeah, you're right, you're right. Oh, that one was cooler because he came around on, you know, on stage. Okay. That was the cooler bit. But this one here, I don't know. The fact that it was also set in that old time. And one, it was interesting seeing that this is how radio shows... You know, these bands used to go on these tours and people would come out and see them. And hopefully the radio made them popular. I just loved that shit. But her in particular. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I obviously should get around to watching this one.
Even just for the singing. I don't know. It's good.
All right, my number six is another film I dislike actively and a whole hell of a lot. Paul Thomas Anderson's There Will Be Blood for Daniel Day-Lewis.
I haven't seen this movie.
For his role as the silver miner turned oil baron.
What's this movie about?
It's effectively about a guy who's trying to set up an oil rig mine. He's trying to mine for
oil rig. That's a
dig for oil.
Yeah.
Whatever in California.
Right.
And he's ruthless and he is extreme in his views, and as the film goes and he gets more and more stressed, he unravels at the seams. That's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Wow.
As you can imagine, his method way absolutely goes the whole hog with it.
Really?
And he is impressive and he is magnetizing, but it's like 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 40 minutes, this film. And without that, I mean, not it's all about him, but the point is the film that's happening around him, I could care less about.
Really?
His performance.
So you dislike the film?
I dislike the film. I think he's great, but I dislike the film. He is... You watch this film for him. Everything else is so secondary.
God.
For me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Look, I've heard this before. The reason I avoided this film is because I heard it was crap. And you told me that the other one, there will be the Anton Chigurh one, the fucking, what's his name? Javier Bardem.
Oh, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men. These were always compared for me for some reason.
I think they're around the same time.
Yeah, so I never saw this one. But okay. All right, I agree. Look, he's
nothing
amazing.
Alike. Who's making that connection between No Country for Old Men
and
There
Will
Be Blood?
Maybe my head made it.
There Will Be Blood. I guess maybe I went in expecting there to be a lot more violence.
They're too
because
arty.
Of the name of the title.
Yeah, there will barely be blood.
There will barely be anything interesting except Daniel Day-Lewis's performance. That's what it should have been called.
I just like There Will Be Blood too, so fucking... I mean, yeah, so...
No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men, sorry.
It's disgraceful. That film is fantastic.
Really? That piece of shit. Yeah. All right. Well, from one pissing of Paul off to another... My number five is Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump. Oh. Yeah, boy! Now let's just talk.
No.
Before fucking Paul goes on his fucking bullshit fucking ass wipe, nipple nose fuck face, ass wipe, crappy sound drop fucking tirade. Don't do it, you motherfucker! Okay, that aside.
Sorry for your ears, listeners.
Yeah, sorry for fucking Paul, everyone. Sorry Paul's life had to fucking intersect with yours. Forrest Gump.
Suck my dick.
Tom Hanks, best actor, absolutely. The scene where he asks Jenny. Remember, he discovers that she's got his kid and he didn't know. And then he's like, is he stupid? Or that fucking wrecked me, that scene. Crushed the shit out of me. Very harsh. Also, great film. I don't even know what your issue is. Is it because of the change in fucking narrative structure?
That's part of it.
That's it, isn't it?
Yep.
That thing pissed you off and it made you blind to all the good shit in the movie.
It's a one note film. Bull
titties, man.
Hated it.
Gary Sinise using all these cool special effects where his legs weren't there, but it wasn't spectacular because it was still cool. His mama getting slammed by fucking the... the principal. That was in a PG movie. He was like, your mama sure does care about your education, boy. I can't even believe it's in a movie. He's like, amazing. Anyway, great movie, great film, great performance.
This sort of thing ain't my bag, baby.
Nothing's your bag, you punk ass bitch.
That's a terrible choice.
But, fucking suck my dick.
But everyone else will love it, so well done.
Oh, piss.
My number five is Frances McDormand in the Coen brothers film Fargo. Now, you don't like this movie.
No, you know, here's what
you
happened.
You betcha.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know what happened?
Marge Gunderson.
Gunderson, yes.
The sheriff who, at first glance, appears to be completely out of her depth. This pregnant sort of, oh, so nice, talking like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you bet, yeah.
But turns out that she's smarter and shrewder and more tenacious than anybody else in this room, in this town, and certainly in this cinematic universe.
Okay, the story about this is that I saw this movie with Paul and a friend of ours, Aaron, back in the day. It was kind of art house for three bros to go out and see, but we heard it was about gangsters and shit, and Steve Buscemi was in it, so we dug it, right? Go over there. And I'm sitting down, and it's a Coen Brothers film, and I'm just not ready for a Coen Brothers film. Also, I only like every alternate Coen Brothers film. I don't know what it is.
You never liked them the first time.
Never. Never
well,
the first time.
Except whatever the latest one was, I think you did like. Oh, rather out now. Not that's the latest one, but I think you liked that one first time out.
Yeah, possibly. Mm. I was pretty big, though. So,
I wish I had a button that said, shock me.
Look forward to that next week. Yes, but, and so the first time I saw it in the cinema, I'm like, what is this shit? It's so long and boring and this and that. And then like the third or fourth viewing, I don't know how I got to a third and fourth viewing, but I did.
Because it's always on TV.
Well, the scene that actually I always remember is not the wood chipper scene. It's not only, it's the scene where the Asian dude is got this most painful conversation where he's trying to crack onto her because she meets him as an old friend from high school or something. And he's just the dorkiest. It's like, I remember seeing it with my sister, and after the scene was over, we looked at each other and went, holy shit, what was that? It was just harrowing. And she, the whole time, is trying to play that, no, I'm not interested in you, but I just realized it now, thing.
Whoa, hold on.
What is this?
You came to like this film when an Asian guy ineffectually cracked on to someone?
Hang on, a white woman? That's what you meant to say?
I didn't want to limit it.
But, well, here's the thing, though. I think that, because that Asian guy did a horrible job. Like, he's a great actor because it fucking killed, right? But if you were actually that guy, you'd walk out and kill yourself directly. Like, you would just go, that was fucked. And then boom, it's over, right?
Him and John Favreau in Swingers. When he's
calling
back
with the phone call?
Yeah.
This was way worse than that.
Oh, you reckon?
It was because he's like, yeah, you know, you can do worse than this. And then he's just fucked up, man. It's just fucked up. So, and she's also like, he's like, can I come over and sit next to you? And she's like, no, you should sit over there. Sit on the other side. And he's like, sorry, he had to fucking apologize. It was so fucking horrible, man. I couldn't stand it. So, yes.
I like the way the film we've talked about most is the one that has a scene featuring a date gone wrong. We are a top of the line movie podcast,
like
ladies and gentlemen.
We've all been there, people. I think we've all been there, right? Surely.
Everyone's
everyone's had an Asian guy.
Do some that of us more often than others.
Yeah, some people I know more often than others. But
all right, well, that's my five. Over to you for your four.
Okay, number four is goddamn Russell Crowe in Gladiator's Son. Yeah.
You know what? It's an obvious choice.
Is it not on your list?
It's not on my list. And I'll tell you why. Because I like the film so much, but I don't remember thinking, holy shit, Russell Crowe is amazing in this film.
Really? You know where the killer was in this movie?
Like the whole film. It kind of detracts away from Russell's star.
Understand. Because it's definitely a best directory type movie.
Yeah. And a best picture-y type movie.
Yes, and apparently a best actor movie. Mm-hmm. But I think the scene that nailed me was that, so he manages to get away from being executed by the Roman guards, but he knows that that guy has sent people to kill his family, right? So then the horse tramples the kid and then they take out the wife, right?
Yep.
And then he comes back and when he sees it all, what he's done, what Russell Crowe has decided to do is simply it's noiseless and his mouth is agape open and his eyes are squinted and you can see the tears on his face, but you actually can't see the tears, and he sinks to his knees, and that's the thing. And that enough, that one scene, I'm like, you know what? That was a great choice, because he could have bellowed, he could have gotten angry. No, he just chose to be crushed. So I'm like, fucking, that's just good stuff, man. Plus all the action.
I'm not knocking
shit.
It, I'm just, yeah, for me.
No, I understand, because the movie's probably better than the performance.
Oh, but the performance is, it won the Academy Award.
But that's the performance still carried, that's why the movie was good, so back and forth, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
I guess in the end, the roles, mostly, for me, there is one or two exceptions. Most of my films, or the performances I'm awarding, are in films which I don't love that much.
Yeah, I see what you mean. The contrast is high. Yeah,
exactly. That's it. All right, nice pick. That's a nice pick. I like it a lot. My number four is a classic.
All right.
It's the oldest film on my list, which is not as old as the oldest film on your list. It won't be on yours, which will, again, stagger the masses. What? It's Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Yeah.
There is no more iconic character in the last 47 years of film than Marlon Brando in The Godfather. Vito Corleone.
I probably agree.
How many... Look, you've done it. I've done it. We live in hope of being asked to be a godfather just so we can do...
Absolutely.
...the godfather impersonation.
Exactly. BT Dubs, I am a godfather.
And I'm sure you have.
Oh, I closed the door at the end of the conversation. It was... The...
Can you ask me again while I'm standing by a door?
It definitely deserves to be on a list. It's just not on mine. But then again, I got to it too late. But no, like, everyone's going to agree with you on this. But you're going to win. It's fine.
I don't know. I think your Forrest Dump pick will get some love. There is a vocal majority of our listeners who like to shit on me for hating that film.
Oh, yeah. It's called The World.
Yeah. So anyway, no more needs to be said. That's my number four, Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Fair enough. My number three is something I've always fucking liked. It's Alonzo Harris, Denzel Washington's character in Training Day.
Slightly low.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. This, I think Denzel's role in this is the physical embodiment of the word swagger. Like,
yeah, I like that.
Except swagger isn't even cool enough to fucking tell me what Denzel's doing in this thing. He's an aging, you know, streetwise detective. So cool in the gang that his car has fucking hydraulic, that fucking thing on it, right? And he's wearing big ass chains and a fucking beanie, and he's like...
And he still carries it off.
Dude, he kills it! There's not another man I would think of that could do this. Even a cop who's actually doing that.
That's a bingo.
I'm telling you, man. Even when shit fucks up for him, he's still cool. It's crazy good, man. You like it, right?
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
It's my number two.
Is your number two?
That's my number two.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's... The way, first of all, it kind of starts out as like, yeah, he's hostile, he's off because he's been saddled with a rookie.
Yeah.
And then it kind of transitions to a slight bit of kind of, we're connecting here and it's going all right. Mm-hmm. And then when he turns, at whatever point in the film it is, two-thirds of the way through, give or take.
Leaves him in the fucking,
yeah. After that, he is intense. And like, even with the people on the street, he's intense and they all respect the fuck out of him. Oh, don't fuck with him.
Which is amazing, right? Like it's you buy it so much because it's like, yeah, he'd probably fuck you up.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have no people. Question he would fuck you up.
Yeah. And then when he fucking dusts Lance Henriksen, what's his name? It's
Scott Glenn?
Yeah, Scott Glenn. Sorry, not Glenn. Scott Glenn. So,
yeah, actually, they do look a little bit similar.
Yeah, I was mixed them up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I hadn't thought about that before. Yep.
Yeah, so, what can I say? This is the shit, man. I've always dug
it. Great film. Everything you've just said, I totally agree. He's intimidating as all fuck, and that's what just brought it home for me.
Mm.
All right, my number three then. First time ever on the countdown.
No, what? Okay,
two of the same person in my list.
Holy
so
crap.
My number three is also Frances McDormand. Who is clearly my favorite female actor.
No shit.
In Three Billboards Outside Ebbing,
you
Missouri.
You suck this movie's dick a lot.
Her performance as the grieving mother, Mildred Hayes, is just out of this world.
I actually do agree. She's not on my list, but I actually do agree.
And this is the exception to that. Well, I was saying before, one of the exceptions, Training Day being another, of films that, generally speaking, I love and appreciate the performance versus most of the rest of my list where it's and The Godfather now that I think about it. But the bottom half of my list is all films I don't really love that much, but the performances stand out.
Mm.
So she's phenomenal in this movie. Absolutely just kills every scene of it. Fighting with John Hawkes.
I think that is that whole thing, the way she plays her personality throughout the movie is what kills it.
Sitting with Woody Harrelson, having those conversations on the swing.
I think
just,
I like that.
Oh, fuck.
I think that was my favorite.
And even the way the film ends up and she's in the car with Sam Rockwell and they're... Man.
A lot of controversy about that bit, but
there is. And I don't buy into the controversy.
Neither do I.
The controversy. I'm absolutely fine with the direction the film takes. It doesn't, in my mind, it does make him more sympathetic, but it doesn't forgive him for being the racist.
Right, exactly.
Fuck
that he is. Exactly. It's not giving him a pass.
No.
So, yeah. No, good show. Good call.
It's basically saying that you're allowed to be more complex than one note.
Yes, agreed. Which is exactly what I
Which is human life.
Exactly.
So
no one's including
I don't get,
good
I just don't
bad.
Get the backlash against it. I don't get why it didn't win Best Picture. Anyway.
Social Justice Warriors. That's the backlash. Okay.
Okay. Your two.
My number two is Lester Burnham. That is Kevin Spacey's character in American Beauty.
Oh, controversial.
Well, let's just get past the fact that Kevin Spacey's a piece of shit and all that sort of stuff, but I'm talking about...
So what is it about that performance then that really sold you? Because I did think about it and then I thought, it's more the movie for me than it is the
performance. The
braveness.
Yeah, it is the movie as well, but the braveness of that performance because he's... I don't know if his history that's come to light now helps or hinders or whatever makes him allows him to do this role where he's he's statutory raping. He's not even statutory. This girl.
Well, he doesn't sleep with her, does he? He never gets to it.
It's about to go in, and then she says, "I'm this age," and he backs off.
Yeah.
Still, man, you don't do that shit on film. I don't know. It was just really, really, really like starkly brave. So the actual performance itself, though, where he's the guy who's this like, you know, every Dan, and then he just decides to fuck the system, smokes weed, works out, does this shit, all this sort of stuff, catches his wife fucking around.
What is that car in the drive? I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I rule.
That's my car. I bought it. Don't you think you should have asked me about this? No, I wanted it and I bought it. I rule.
That was so good.
I'm paraphrasing.
In the trailer, though, that was there and I'm like, yeah. All right. So that was good. So he's playing this mini complex character thing.
The next 20 years of Wayne's relationships was sorted out.
For the record, in none of those did I ever rule. the performance itself is probably... Okay. Yeah, it made the movie. But same with the thing. You know. So there you are.
Fair enough. My two, as mentioned, then is Denzel Washington in Training Day. So let's reveal, go back through, recap your list, and then reveal your number one, sir.
My number 10 is Yul Brynner in The King and I. Number 9... Raymond Babbitt in Rayman. 8, Gordon Gekko, Wall Street. Friggin' 7, Emma Stone in La La Land. 6, Reese Witherspoon, Walk the Line. 5, Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump.
I've charged in your general direction.
There it is. Number 4, Rusty Crowe in Gladiator. Rusty Crowe. Rusty the Crow. Number 3, Denzel in Training Day. Number 2... Kevin Spacey in American Beauty. And number 1 is Leo in The Revenant.
Holy shit.
Absolutely.
Really?
Dude, this guy ate a raw bison liver, nearly got hypothermia, all sorts of shit. This guy, there's no more.
Wow.
More.
I'm impressed.
There's no more okay, committed performance, possibly maybe Dan Day-Lewis. I don't know. This guy went through the wire and he's like, I want that fucking Oscar. And he fucking had this. And
respect.
That movie. And look, I've only seen the movie once. To be fair.
All right. Buy a 4K player. I've got it. I can give it to you. Watch it on 4K.
All right. I'll buy a 4K player.
just for that purpose.
Just for that. But the whole time I'm engaged by this, that's a long-ass goddamn movie.
It's a simple option. You can just come around and watch it at my place.
I could do that and save like $8,000. All right. I don't know if you've got enough time because this is a bitch-ass long movie.
Watch it again.
Look,
I've seen it
actually,
3 times. Now.
I think if you think, because I only saw it in the cinema and mm-hmm. I was blown away by all of
yeah,
that.
It's gorgeous.
And you could only see it on a big ass nice TV, I think, really. Otherwise, you'd still probably be impressed, but goddamn, it was amazing. And his performance amazing, too.
Look, I agree. And I was so pleased when he won the Academy Award.
So was I, because you know what? Let him have it. That's what we said.
Well, I think
the movie.
It was a body of work thing. I agree. And that's kind of why I didn't put it on my list, because I thought the listeners will be dark that, oh, yeah, but that wasn't his best role. His best role was fucking Revolutionary Road or fucking The Departed or whatever else. So. Which, by the way, I watched Infernal Affairs last night for the first time.
What do you think?
Yeah, some very similar. I mean, it obviously ends differently.
Yes.
At a point.
Yes.
But yeah, look, I can see the genesis of it. And I think somewhere along the line recently we said, we said that, well, you take a good film and then add Martin Scorsese on top of it.
Exactly.
Of course it's going to be a great film.
Yep.
Now I 100% can stand by that because I've actually seen the film.
Precisely. And because The Departed is definitely better.
Oh, yeah. You know? Infinitely.
Yeah. But there's a few sequels in Infernal Affairs.
Which are all on Netflix and I now have queued up to watch.
Oh, nice.
So I can check them out.
Okay. Not bad at all.
And the star of it, the guy who's the Leo character, Andy Lau.
Andy Lau.
Turns out Patsy has a photo with him.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Patsy is Paul's girlfriend.
Yes.
I mean, her fiance, everyone.
Yeah.
And she is also Asian like me.
Yeah.
So, and she really, so she's met Andy Lau?
Yeah, when she was like 13 or some shit.
Dude, that's huge, man. That's a little like meeting fucking Chow Yun Fat. Not or a bit,
well,
a bit.
By our
it's,
standards,
it's on that. Yeah, it's on that level.
Definitely inferior.
Yeah, totally.
Chow Yun Fat would be like number one. Jet Li, Chow Yun Fat.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, wait a minute. Jackie Chan's on top, right? Maybe not
for
you.
Yeah, he's
we're just talking about Asians we like, everyone.
Fighting stars. Anyway.
All right. So anyway, sorry, just to cap off,
yep.
The reason Leo's... I actually think, because you say body of work, right? This, I think, was his best performance. Like, I don't recognize him in this movie. I recognize him in every other movie.
Okay.
So, All right,
you stand by a choice. I like... It was my 12, my honorable mention.
Not bad.
So my number... Well, let's go back through my list. First of all, at number 10, Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs. Jack Nicholson at 9 in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Tom Hanks in Philadelphia at 8. Natalie Portman in Black Swan at number 7. Daniel Day-Lewis at number 6 in There Will Be Blood. Frances McDormand for the first time at 9, number 5 spot with Fargo. Marlon Brando in The Godfather at number 4. And Frances McDormand for the second time in 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri at number 3.
What was the fuck, huh?
Denzel Washington. Not worth responding to. In Training Day
yes.
At number 2. And my number one, I cannot believe this is not on your list.
What is it?
Who is the most iconic movie villain who's won an Academy Award ever, Wayne?
Jack?
Villain?
Oh, villain. I don't know.
Hannibal Lecter.
No, yes, yes.
The Silence of the Lambs.
All right, all right.
And again, our first on the countdown, the same movie in a list twice.
Yes. Not bad. No.
16 minutes and change, apparently. Just less than 17 minutes, and he takes out the Academy Award for Best Actor, which normally would be Best Supporting Actor role, but he dominates this film. Him and Jodie Foster together are massively impressive. Those two, their scenes that they share are incredible.
I agree. Oh, completely. He's the shit. He made that whole thing popular. He pushed it into basically a franchise.
Well, we had, what's his name, Cox. Brian Cox played Hannibal Lecter in Michael Mann's Manhunter. That's in right. 1980, like six years before this.
Yeah.
No one remembers
okay,
it.
Okay, but that's what, see, if you have a 17-minute long fucking collected role in a movie and then that guy gets an actor, I almost call that Best Editor. But I'm saying, look, there's no doubt he's the shit, all right?
You're no editing. What is the story?
I'm telling you, man, editing makes the movie. There's no movie without the
true,
good editor.
It's true. The editor plays a critically important role. I'm not knocking that.
Just tell fucking Alfonso Cuarón in Roma where he just didn't hire one at all. He didn't even hire someone to cut the film. So, but yes, look, I'm not going to argue with this one. Anthony Hopkins is awesome. He just didn't stick out in my head. Like,
wow.
Because maybe it was just too obvious. Like, I don't know what it was.
Too obvious, he says. The best answer is the wrong answer in Wayne's world.
Oh, whatever your damn logic tells you.
Any honorable mentions we haven't mentioned for you, sir?
No, because this list was fucking hard. Like, I had real problems with this list.
Yeah, this was a tough one. Absolutely tough one. And in the end, did we have, well, we have one crossover.
Yeah, one.
When you were like, will we have two big crossovers? No.
Yeah, I know. We're very different people.
All right. Well, that's our list. Who got it right? Who got it wrong? You can vote for the best list this week in the Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes. But then we always wrap up every show with your take on this week's topic in a segment we call the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking it off with Gerald Morris from the Two Peas on a Podcast. I'm coming up in a couple of weeks' time. I think I'm on his show. We'll give you more details about that. Then top five Steven Spielberg characters we did.
Nice.
Now, Gerald, I did promise I would read it out when he gave a sad face. He wasn't read out last week. His three. Tom Hanks in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Oh, Philadelphia, sorry. Celebrated too soon.
Reese Witherspoon in Walk the Line.
Okay, now word.
And Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. So between the two of us, we covered all of Gerald's. From JM Junks, that's John Mark Junkins on Twitter. First of all, Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. Brando in On the Waterfront.
Oh, not Godfather.
Alec Guinness in Bridge on the River Kwai.
I kind of wish I'd seen that after Obi-Wan and all that.
And then he gave his three actresses as well. Vivien Leigh in Gone with the Wind, Portman in Black Swan, and Diane Keaton in Annie Hall.
Oh, wow. Cool.
From the Dumb Guzzler podcast, good friend of the show, Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Gary Cooper in High Noon, that's really going back as well.
Cool.
And Katharine Hepburn in On Golden Pond.
I have actually seen that.
I haven't.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. I don't really remember anything.
Sam, good friend of the show from the Movie Reviews and 20 Qs podcast. If you're not checking that show out, do please check it out. Number three, Charlize Theron in Monster. I've never seen that movie.
Nor have I, because...
Okay, neither of us have
seen
it.
Yeah,
don't say what you're going to say. Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. And here's another film I haven't seen, which I am ashamed to admit. Robert De Niro in Raging Bull.
I don't think I have either. I'm sorry, everyone.
I need to fix that one. And Tyler Christensen would say the same thing to both of us, because his number one pick, De Niro in Raging Bull... Absolutely. Brando in On the Waterfront, Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump.
What up, dog?
Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs, Diane Keaton, Annie Hall, Jodie Foster, Silence of the Lambs, Natalie Portman, Blake Swan, and Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins.
Ah, Mary Poppins, y'all.
Good friend and high-level patron to the show, James Spence, said De Niro in Raging Bull again, Clark Gable in It Happened One Night, and Claudette Colbert in It Happened One Night.
I've not seen that.
I've not seen that either. Sorry, James. Fred C. Dobbs said the standout is George C. Scott for Patton.
Oh.
There's an old one as well.
Yeah, it's an old one.
Ronnie Cassell, first mention of this legend to the podcast, Nicolas Cage leaving Las Vegas.
I really, really wanted to put Nicolas Cage in here, but that performance was really, like, it's just too tough to watch for me to love it.
Okay, yeah. Kevin Spacey in American Beauty, there you go. Gene Hackman in The French Connection, that's a great film. Bye-bye. Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice, Julianne Moore in Still Alice, and Vivien Leigh in Gone with the Wind.
Julianne Moore?
Yeah, in Still Alice.
Oh, Still Alice. Okay.
And that's Vivien Leigh in Gone with the Wind. Nicole Presley had Russell Crowe in Gladiator, Julia Roberts in Erin Brockovich, and Sean Penn in Mystic River.
I'm too scared to see that movie.
Mystic River?
Yeah. Isn't it really
I've seen it, but I can't remember much about it, to be brutally honest.
Okay.
Blake Jarvis, another good friend to the show. Jack Nicholson, One Flew Out of the Cuckoo's Nest. Two, Jack Nicholson, As Good As It Gets. Thought you might have him on there.
I loved that movie, but his performance was full on. He would phoned it in, I swear to God.
Oh, controversial.
All he's doing is like, hey, this is Simon the Fag. He's making jokes like that, right? And it's nothing like... It just looks like Jack Nicholson is just chilling and trying to fuck Helen Hunt.
Well,
seems which is what he probably does.
Very, very appropriate to use this.
You can't handle the truth!
Now, in that movie, I'll give it to him, even though he had like three lines in it.
And Robert De Niro in Raging Bull. Last one here from Jordy Davidson, top-level patron to the show, very, very good friend, Jack Nicholson, As Good As It Gets.
Wow, maybe I should have put that in.
Denzel Washington in Training Day. Denzel took the role, looked around, and just moved in and inhabited it utterly. And number one, Marlon Brando in The Godfather. True. I don't think there was a more iconic performance. You can't talk Brando without The Godfather in the same breath.
You make your list based on these feedback things, don't you?
Absolutely not.
How dare you? Motherfucker.
How dare you?
I go cold in and that's why I always lose. Okay, I'm starting to see.
I'll explain. And I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Look at this fucking shit.
I have my list. I refine my list based on...
Oh, that's some bullshit right there, Senator!
You have the same reaction, same access to list. The fact that you're too busy banging...
Fuck off! What's this asking about?
Oh, sorry. Abusing yourself.
Yes, thank you.
It's not my bad. It's yours. All right, that is it. Thank you very much for your feedback on today's show. We really, truly do appreciate it. Thanks to everyone we didn't get a chance to get to either. Wayne, what are we doing next week for episode 203 of The Countdown?
I don't fucking know.
There's a shock.
Hang on.
Let's see if we can work this out based on your patented. We put up a spreadsheet that's to share between us. And Wayne so far has not been able to work out anything about said spreadsheet.
No, I got this.
Which is hilarious because I've not changed it at all.
Haven't you? I just put it on Google. Okay, hang on. Here we are.
Well, given that Wayne is fumbling about...
I don't know what it is. Tell me what next week is, ass sandwich. Let's go.
We're having the boys from the IMDb Journey podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Daniel and Dean on to talk the top 10 Academy Award winning films of all time. Full disclosure, we've already recorded it. It was a great fun episode. Really looking forward to letting you hear that one next week in time, of course, for the Oscars the week thereafter.
Right.
Well, one more thing. Guest appearances, Wayne.
Mm.
I am going to be on again, our good friends, the IMDb Journey podcast, because we were on their show last week.
Yeah.
Right. So totally. If you haven't checked it out already,
give them a go.
Daniel and Dean had us on, and we pod v pod, they call it. We went up against them. We sadly lost. I didn't spruik for votes because I do a blind vote. So we won the trivia challenge, you and I.
Yes.
We won something. We lost the IMDb game where you have to pick actors and what they're known for.
It was tough.
We lost that by one thanks to my poor effort on Angelina Jolie.
We all messed around with that. That was a tough one to win.
And then we had a draft on 80s action films and we lost comfortably. I think it was 62% to 38%. And I respected the process. I didn't go and ask all our listeners to go over there and vote for the team that we were. It was a blind vote.
No, it's fine.
Fair enough. They got Die Hard. So well done to Daniel and Dean. And obviously we made a good impression because Daniel has invited me back today. Oh, we're recording shortly for their 50th episode, I believe, or 50 Pod v Pod.
Ooh.
And that is me, Sam, from Movie Reviews and 20 Qs. Mm-hmm. Billy, from We Watch the Thing, good friend to the show.
Yeah.
And shout out to Billy, by the way, who, you know, last week I talked about the USS Indianapolis film.
Yeah.
He managed to find a copy for me and direct me to it. So
oh, my God.
Thank you very much for that, Billy, which I'll be watching and reporting on the next
Look
top 10.
Look at the resources.
Last 10 from that. So three of us versus Dean. So we'll see how bad they're knocked out. It's all about the top 50 films in the IMDb 250.
Congrats on the 50, fellas.
Very much looking forward to that. And so well done to Daniel and Dean. All right, Wayne, how do listeners get in touch with us? Let us know their choices for feedback on the show.
We everywhere, man. Just Google the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at @thecountdownpc. You can hit us up in the Facebook listener community as well. Link is in the show notes. And we host our show on Podbean, which... Before the next episode comes out, we're going to be featured on Podbean as one of the sites of the week. So thank you very, very much to the Podbean peeps for that.
Word.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard. Cannot go an episode without having that one play.
I mean, okay.
It's great when you were so enthused.
Thanks, everyone. We will see you real soon.
Cheers. Yeah.